Let's start with a poem. And you know this one. It's The New Colossus by Emma Lazarus. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-swept sunset gate shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning. And her name? Mother of Exiles. And her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shores. Send these, the homeless tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Emma Lazarus, The New Colossus, 1883. It's not a founding document, it's not necessarily a historical document of our nation, but it certainly has come to dwell in our hearts, right? I mean, we associate it with a lot of the values that we celebrate and honor and try to live in this country. It was donated as a poem to a fundraiser for the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty in 1883. It wasn't part of the dedication service when the pedestal was dedicated in 1886, but in 1903, a plaque went up in memory of Emma Lazarus. She died in 1887, and some friends wanted her to be memorialized, and so they put that plaque up just inside the wall of the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty. I have not been there. I haven't seen it. Has anyone been there and seen it? Yeah. I just really am touched by these words. These words were recently in the news again. I think around the issue of immigration, it comes up a lot, you know, and somebody who was trying to sort of explain the new immigration policy, which is about legal immigration, not illegal immigration, but cutting legal immigrants in this country by 50%. And somebody was trying to say, you know, well, when that was written, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what they were trying to say. But I wasn't buying it. I'm concerned about the direction that sort of takes us, that sort of closed borders and fear of outsiders and immigrants, a country that has been this place, this worldwide welcome that extends from her beacon hand, and what's happening to that. So I have something to say, you know, about the events of the last week. I'm very troubled, like a lot of people are. And I we'll get to the scripture in a minute. Painfully so, I think. Painfully so. But I came up with this sermon title, In Defense of Political Correctness. Because I think we've reached a point where somebody like me has to make a case for it. I've been hearing, I don't remember when people started using the phrase political correctness to sort of dismiss the idea of being sensitive in our language, inclusive in our policies, and accepting in general of the human race. I think it, you know, I was in seminary from 85 to 89. I think it was around there that I started hearing people sort of roll their eyes, well, that's just so politically correct. What are they dismissing when they do that? What are they saying when they say, I don't want to be politically correct? I'm tired of being politically correct, of watching my mouth and my language. A lot of times I've heard people say, maybe I've said this, I don't think I have, but I wouldn't be surprised, frankly, to say, oh, I don't mean to be politically incorrect, but, dot, 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 follow with racist comment, sexist comment, homophobic comment, right? I don't want to be, I know this is politically incorrect, but, dot, dot, dot. Then just be totally disrespectful, ingracious, lack of compassion. I actually think, I mean, I didn't say this out loud, but I had this thought this week at the state fair. Ha! Great place to go if you want to try your compassion meter on the world, right? You know what I came away from? I had this thought, there's too many damn scooters at the Iowa State Fair. They're everywhere. What's with all these scooters? And people that are obviously on it for the first time in their life, they don't know how to drive it. They're a menace to society, right? I had this very non-compassionate response to people with limited mobility. I think it's great, right? When I stop and think about it, well, they get to enjoy the state fair just like I do. I have to get out of the way. I have to be patient. I have to take a deep breath. But, you know, that's great. Anyone, you know, you can get to the state fair on a scooter, and you can enjoy food on a stick. When I'm compassionate, when I can rise to the occasion and be my best self, I can not say that out loud. There's too many dang scooters, you know. But I've been known to do that, right? What is with the lack of compassion in that? The reason I think it's so important, and that we have to say this out loud, right? An American died last week at the hands of a Nazi in my lifetime on American soil. You can talk about it lots of different ways, but that is the basic. That's not fake news. That's not spin. Somebody died at the hands of a Nazi on American soil in my lifetime. I'm not okay with that. I'm not sure what to do about it, but I think one thing I can do is say, I'm not okay with it. And I think I can say, you know, with the blood that has been spoiled on this soil and in Europe, in defense of politically correct ideas, the corollary being that there are some politically incorrect ideas, right? And that's what's hard to say, but it needs to be said too, right? And I've just picked two easy ones, softballs for the preacher. Slavery. Can we all say slavery is bad? It's part of our past. We're glad to be rid of it. A lot of blood shed, right, on our soil to make sure this is a nation that's free of slavery. And Nazism, another softball. Okay, I'm against Nazis. And again, they can be modernized. They can have websites. They can have campaigns about free speech and whatnot. But a Nazi is a Nazi, and a Nazi's basic claim is that some races are inferior and need to be done away with. And we're not okay with that, right? Can we say we're not okay with that? Is it politically incorrect to say that? No, actually. It's not. And the free speech that the Constitution guarantees us does not apply to a couple of, you know, one of the examples that's always given in sort of ethics classes or morality, and you can't cry fire in a crowded theater, right? You can't incite violence and harm. Your free speech does not enable you to do some things. That's one of them. Incitement is not covered by the Constitution. Hate speech, I believe, is not covered. That may still be in, you know, I don't know, there will still be make cases going to the Supreme Court to really nail that one out, but I don't think it's covered by the free speech. When we say free speech, there are limitations to it, right? So what do we do with Nazis? What do we do with people who are okay with slavery? I don't have an answer for that, to be quite honest. I don't think we respond to them with violence. And there's a school of thought that says we do. I'm just not sure what to do with it. Whenever I get to that not sure point, the preacher in me wants to say, I don't know, but the answer is probably Jesus. So let's turn to the Bible and see what Jesus does. Are you sure you want to do that today? You know, I didn't just pick this text so it would go along with an interesting sermon on politically correctness. This is actually the lectionary for today. Churches are going to be wrestling with this story all over this town, all over this country. Lutheran churches, Methodist churches, Disciples of Christ churches, Catholic churches, they're all wrestling with the Matthew text, which in my Bible has the headline, The Canaanite Woman's Faith. the Canaanite woman's faith. The star character in this story is a Canaanite woman, and her faith is what leads the story, the headline. You know, she gets the headlines. Honestly, you know why, I think? Because if Jesus got the headlines for this story, it would say something like, Jesus is a jerk. Just this once, Jesus has a bad day. Or another headline might read, Jesus lets his bigotry, his nationalism, and his ethnic superiority colors show, right? Because that's basically, Jesus is saying Jews first. This woman needs help. Her daughter is sort of enslaved by a demon spirit. And the woman is yelling, and Jesus says, send her away. His disciples say, send her away. And I've preached this sermon before, too. This is the one time when Jesus does what his disciples ask him to do. And it doesn't go well. That should be instructive to us. When Jesus follows the disciples instead of the disciples following Jesus, it takes a nasty turn. So he just, oh, okay, we'll give this a try. And so he says, basically, get out of here. This bread was meant for the children of Israel. I am here for the lost children of Israel. I'm not here for the riffraff, the Canaanite women, the non-Jews. Right? This is his nationalism moment shining. So she goes away, end of story? No. The headline is the Canaanite woman's faith. So she does not give up. What's the phrase that comes to mind? And still she persisted. She came and knelt before him and said, Lord, help me. Lord, help me. That's one of my answers to the question of what do we do when we get to this point, when we're at our end. I think we can say the prayer, Lord, help me. It's where it begins for her. And he answered, it's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. See what he did there? He called her a dog. If I could use the B word in church, I would. That's what he did. This is our Jesus. Dismisses her as a dog. And she says, yes, Lord. Maybe I'm a dog. I accept your premise. More than I would do in that moment, I think. She says, even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table. So Jesus answered her, I was just kidding. I wish he said that. I was just kidding. No, he says, woman, great is your faith. Maybe what he was really thinking was, I was just testing you. I don't think he was doing that either. I just think he sincerely had a moment. You know, even Jesus, there's a sermon about this text that's titled something like, if Jesus can overcome his bigotry and racism, then so can we. So we get to see him overcome his lower self, which probably, you know, that just says he's human like you and I. He had a Jewish sense of national pride, and he let it get in the way for a moment. But then he sees faith in action, and he is moved, and it changes him. And he says, let it be done for you as you wish. And her daughter was healed instantly. I'm inspired by that. And I think the woman is right to have the headline. I think it's right that my Bible in particular and lots of Bibles sort of lift her up as the person of exemplar faith in this particular story. And what I take away from that is some hopefulness about those who persist, about our willingness not to be dismissed, about our willingness to turn to Jesus, frankly. The more I think about the divisions in our country, in our community, in our world, I honestly think that I need to preach more Jesus. I never thought I would say that. And you may think, well, that doesn't seem that radical for a preacher to preach Jesus. Well, remember, I grew up in a congregational church, and I think I'd heard of Jesus once or twice, but he wasn't a, you know, he wasn't a big feature of our faith. It was more about God. It was more about social justice. The more I think about the divisions in this country, the more I think Jesus. Jesus. What her prayer was, Lord, have mercy. And Jesus is a picture of who God is, the nature and character and essence of God, I think. And it is mercy and compassion. You know, maybe the word is politically correct. I don't think that really gets at it. But I do think that our need to use, to be careful about our language and to be intentionally inclusive, I think that moves us in the direction of practicing compassion and showing mercy and living justly, right? Last week's sermon on a stick, a couple of them that stick out to me, the Martin Luther King, the moral arc of the universe is long and it bends toward justice. Cornel West said, remember, love is what justice looks like in public. I like that one. Love is what justice looks like in public. So, division, racism, hatred, what do we do with that? I think we persist. We do like this woman in this story, this Canaanite woman, this non-Jewish, non-Christian, you know, cast-off dog. We use her as an exemplar of faith, and we persist, and we insist on justice, and we insist on food, and we insist on the basic human rights that all are entitled to. And we do that because Jesus is who he is. Even on a bad day, even when he falters and he slips into that little moment of national pride, even then, he rises to the better nature of his being and calls us to do the same. Because we can, you know, we can operate down on this lower plane of our baser nature, or we can embrace the higher beings, angels of our better nature, right? And I think that's what we're called to. God, have mercy. Lord, help us. Amen. And Lord, give us peace, which is what Dona Nobis Pacem means in Latin. It's a wonderful prayer. Give us peace, give us peace. I'm going to collect prayer requests. If you have any in writing, I'll take those at this time. Thank you. Do you want to go ahead and play that once now, and then we'll sing it at the end of the prayer, too? Thank you.